All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Craig Reed with WR Squared Advisors, and we thank everybody for joining us today on our third Thursday conference call. Today we are fortunate enough to have Nick Lacey joining us. Nick joined Raymond James in 2006 as a fixed income due diligence officer and has over 14 years of industry experience. Nick's responsibilities include overseeing the asset allocation policy for our asset management services discretionary models. Nick has a bachelor's degree in finance and political science from the University of South Florida, as well as an MBA from the University of Tampa. And today what we're going to ask Nick to do is maybe spend about 15 minutes talking about the firm's current asset allocation outlook, as well as just some general market comments. And then after he's finished sharing those comments, we will open it up for some Q&A. So with that, Nick, if you want to go ahead and get started, that would be great.
All right, perfect. Let me go ahead and start off by thanking you for allowing me some time to go through this. And this comes at a good time because I'm in the process right now of writing up our quarterly outlook piece and the second quarter review of what happened and then kind of what we think is going to happen. So let me start with for this quarter some of the big drivers that have happened and you know what that should happen, what that should cause as far as asset allocation views, some of the changes we've made, why we've made some of those changes, some things that you might see in the future from a recommendation on the asset allocations. And hopefully going through some of this information, it will help generate some type of questions that you want me to address. So let me start with big picture. The big picture is the fact that the global equity markets are actually in pretty good shape when it comes fundamentally. I think the main concern that we see is that the U.S. is pushing into late cycle. You know, to use a baseball analogy, maybe we're now batting in the extra innings. Tax cut helped push some of this stuff down the road. But the fact is that valuations in the U.S. remain elevated and profitability and quality have started to come down a little bit, which long-term causes some concern. The areas of the world that really have the best outlook from a market performance standpoint over the next few years tends to be the developed world outside of the U.S., and this comes from two main factors. Number one, starting level evaluations are more attractive, and we can go through why. But in addition to that, you have improving fundamentals outside the world, primarily in profitability, looking at things like return on equity, return on invested capital, profit margins. They're all on their way up, whereas in the U.S., those margins are basically heading down, and that's not something that we want to see from supporting levels of valuation. The last thing that we pay attention to all around the world tends to be sentiment, and sentiment is really more definable by behavioral tendencies, and you can think of sentiment as where's the momentum of the various markets, you know, is there a lot of money going into these markets, is there money coming out of these markets? In addition to that, where are you getting support for central banks? And one of the things that we're looking at is kind of a deviation or bifurcation in central bank policies, where in Europe you have central banks and Japan that are very easy and are looking to stay easy for at least the next year, perhaps longer, whereas in the U.S. you do have monetary policy that is hiking rates and reducing balance sheets, which will eventually have an effect on the economy on the negative. So we're looking at these various factors, and what we're saying is, you know, we think from what we see today, looking out for the next 3 to 5 years, you're likely to earn a better rate of return overseas than you are in the U.S., specifically in the developed world. Now, that's just on the equity side. Fixed income side is different. In the fixed income side, it's bond math, and by training, I'm a bond guy. So I'll say I don't think bonds are all that complicated because as long as I have a calculator, I can tell you what's going to happen from a cash flow standpoint. And the duration of the market here in the U.S. is a little over 5 years. Therefore, if I wanted to get an estimate of returns over the next 5 years, it's easy to just do some duration matching and say U.S. investment grade bond market is going to return around 3 to 3.2% average over the next 5 years, just based on current yield to worst and path of rates. Now, when you move outside of U.S. high quality, you start to run into some problems. When it comes to credit, especially lower quality credit, we have most recently taken a maximum underweight to high-yield bonds and emerging market debt because they act as a credit instrument. And since we're late cycle and since the yield spread that we're getting on these securities tend to be historically tight, it's not something that we think investors should be taking that much more risk in owning. Therefore, in the moderate allocations, which are really balanced investors, we have the lowest allocation to high-yield bonds that we've ever had, which, by the way, is zero. In the conservative strategies, we have a very little bit, but it's basically our minimum exposure. The area in fixed income right now that we like the most is U.S. short-duration high quality. We're earning a yield of about 2.4 to 2.5%, and we're taking zero credit risk, and yet we're able to benefit from a yield curve that is stubbornly staying flat. Therefore, we should see improvements in yield as the Fed continues to raise their rates that we might not actually experience on the 10-year yield or longer. And we can go through, if you want, you know, where the Fed is heading, you know, what they've said is likely to happen and what the repercussions of that are. But ultimately, we all know the Fed wants to raise rates. They want to raise rates and they want to sell bonds for a variety of reasons. They're sitting at about 2% right now, and they're likely going to end at around 3%, which gives you four more rate hikes over the next year until the Fed gets to what we would call normalization. So all that being said, the U.S. is probably in the best position in the next 6 months to see superior returns. So the outlook that we have is really two-faceted. One is over the next 3 to 5 years, which is how we structure strategic allocation recommendations. Within the near term, very, very little has to do with fundamentals and valuations and so forth, and it has everything to do more with behavioral tendencies. And right now, there tends to be very strong sentiment for U.S. equities, specifically small and mid-cap. And we see small mid-cap stocks in the U.S. up anywhere from 10-12%, whereas large caps are up, call it 4-5%. And because you have this momentum behind these smaller company names, driven in part by the dramatic underperformance last year relative to large, but also driven by the idea that there are those that believe that if we continue to see the dollar move higher and if we continue to have some difficulties on trade, you're likely to see small caps benefit from that over their large cap brethren. So that's a little bit of a landscape of what we're recommending, and I'll just reiterate, while we like equities, we really like equities outside the U.S. We don't necessarily like U.S. equity as much as we normally would. Therefore, we basically are calling for underweights to U.S. equity. We have a full underweight to U.S. small mid-cap because of how unattractive their fundamentals are, even though from a momentum or a behavioral standpoint, they're doing quite well. That's really a short-term trade. In the U.S. large cap space, one thing that we're encouraging investors to do is, with some of your U.S. large cap exposure, start rotating into some more defensive large cap structure. Those could be areas such as equity income oriented or low volatility stocks for a portion of that, because we are concerned that, you know, if we do have some kind of an issue in the U.S., those relatively more expensive securities are likely to get hit a little bit more and rotate more into defensive is probably a good way to help investors at this point in the cycle. So that's 9 minutes of me throwing out a bunch of stuff. Before I go on, are there some specific questions that anybody wants me to address?
Nick, this is Craig again. I do have one question with regard to active versus passive. You know, we've obviously seen the passive index funds perform very well over the last several years relative to actively managed funds. And I just wondered if you had comments about that as we go forward given kind of where we are in the cycle.
I definitely
agree. It varies from one asset class to another.
No, I can definitely touch on those. And what I'll tell you is for the last 18 months, passive strategies have struggled to keep up with the active strategies. And it's really the first time that we've had some outperformance across the board for active strategies, whether you're talking U.S. strategies or non-U.S. strategies, and even U.S. large cap, even U.S. large cap strategies. So we started to see that that breakthrough. But here's the research. When we looked at putting active and passive strategies together, we really tried to identify what's the ideal situation for each. And here are some truisms that we came up with. The first one is, in U.S. large cap, all else being equal, it is hard for an active manager to add excess returns net of fees. It's not that they can't. It's just hard. So in what environment does U.S. large cap active management provide excess returns net of fees? And the answer is when the markets don't go up very much or when markets are fully valued. So when you look at it from the perspective of when would you as an investor want to have greater exposure to the active market, it's when you feel that valuations have reached kind of their full potential. Therefore, you want an active approach to navigate a market that is highly suspicious when it comes to maintaining those levels of valuation. I think we're in those environments now, and we've seen that that bifurcation in performance. Not across the board, but it's been a pretty good sight to see. You want to own more passive exposures in markets if you believe that those markets are poised to exceed their long-term average expectations. So, for example, if you think long-term average expectations are 7, 8, or 9%, and these markets are poised to increase that rate by, I call it 50%, so you're expecting a 15% return instead of a 7 or 8% return over the next couple of years, you're more likely to get a better return out of the passive space. Because when markets go up a lot, typically you want to enjoy that beta. When markets aren't going up a lot, you want to be careful of that beta and you want to seek more alpha. When you feel that markets are fully valued, you want alpha and you want less beta. And it's really about managing not just the asset allocation risk, but also the active risk. And this is true in U.S. and non-U.S. It's true in large caps and small caps. Fixed income is a little bit different because in fixed income, the index itself is very difficult to replicate in an ETF space or a passive space, and there tends to be a high degree of tracking error. Therefore, you can get a space where managers might not beat the index, but the managers are able to beat the proxy of the index relative to an ETF because of how wide the tracking error is, especially as you move to the less liquid securities, credit, high yield, non-US, those areas. I will tell you today, our positioning is we are overweight active in U.S. and we are overweight passive internationally. And you can simply look at the comments that I made and see how we got there. We think the international developed markets are likely to achieve higher than expected average returns over the next 3 to 5 years, and we want to capture that beta. Where in the U.S., we think we're going to go through a rough patch over the next 3 to 5 years because of where we are in the cycle, so we want more active exposure in that space. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, thank you. You know, something else that that I wondered if you could touch on is when people think about the markets being fully valued or fairly valued, let's say, and the fact that, you know, you're saying that maybe we're in the extra innings, to use a baseball analogy, and they think about the potential for a downturn, the last meaningful downturn we had, let's say, was in 2008, and it was obviously a much larger downturn than maybe what we've seen at other times throughout the market's history. So I wondered if you could maybe put into context what we would expect for the next downturn. I mean, would you expect us to be in more of a mild recession when the economy does finally slow, or would it? Could you maybe speak to that a little bit? Maybe the magnitude of the downturn we would expect.
Yeah, I'm sitting here nodding my head because it's something that we spend a lot of time thinking about, because really asset allocation is really risk mitigation, risk management. That's really what it comes down to. And when you start looking at putting pieces of a puzzle together, really what you want to have an idea of is how much might an investor lose by gaining access to these markets. So I will tell you, in my book, the last major downturn we had was in 2011. It's when everybody was scared the Fed was going to stop with their QE, and people woke up and realized that Europe had a debt issue that started in Cyprus and spread to Greece and was likely to spread into Spain, Portugal, and Italy. And the markets had about a 20% drawdown. And that's what we refer to as a normal pullback. That is a perfectly normal pullback that should happen every once in a while. So I expect at any given year that the markets will drop 20% any given year because it's perfectly normal. However, if you want to think about what does a traditional bear market look like going forward, we will tell you the modeling work that we've done shows that the U.S. stock market today has about a 25% drop built into it. And the reason that we come up with that is we simply look at its downside risk today and what's likely to happen. So I will tell you the statistics tell us that U.S. large caps today have a 5% chance, because you can't say it's a guarantee. There's a 5% chance that it's going to drop 25% at some point. Now, we don't know when that is. Nobody can forecast when a drop is going to occur. We just don't know. Here are two things to consider. Number one, the fixed income market is forecasting a recession in about 2 years. Now, it doesn't mean they're right. It's just simply what the forward yield curve is showing. And we're showing an inverted yield curve starting 18 months to 24 months from now. Now, an inverted forward curve doesn't mean as much as an inverted spot curve. And the spot curve today is not inverted, it's just flat. This tells us one of two things. It tells us either A, the Fed is going to stop raising rates when it gets to about 3%, because that's where the forward rates are sitting 2 years from now. Or B, the Fed at some point in time, instead of raising rates, they're going to have to lower rates. And the only reason they would lower rates is because the economy starts to show signs of a slowdown and a contraction. History tells us the latter is more likely, and here's why. Every time the Fed has raised rates multiple times, a recession has followed. Now, sometimes it takes 3 years, sometimes it takes 4 years, sometimes it takes longer. But the Fed will eventually cause the economy to slow down. Whether that slowdown means that we get negative growth or whether that slowdown means that we get just barely positive growth is irrelevant, because whether you're getting a 0.5% growth or negative 0.5% growth, it feels bad. The Fed came out recently and said that they think our economy can grow sustainably at just under 2%. Specifically, they said 1.8%. That's what they think our economic potential is. Now, this quarter, we're likely to see a very big number, and next quarter, we're likely to see a big number, and then we're likely to see it fall off a cliff because the stimulus is going to run out. So does that mean that the Fed then no longer has the ability to raise rates? Maybe. But I do believe that the Fed is very, very cautious about getting short rates above long rates, because every risk model in the world basically starts with, is the yield curve inverted? If so, then it is a risk-off situation. So okay, speaking of the downside stuff, so it's not just the S&P. So think about it this way. S&P goes down all the time. As a matter of fact, about 30% of the time you have negative returns. That's not really the pointer that I try to make to investors. It's the idea that when the S&P is down 25%, small caps are down close to 35%. High yield bonds are down close to 19%. Emerging market equity is down close to 40%. So you have all these things that tend to happen when markets go down. First of all, they all go down, but some go down a lot more than others. While the correlation spike, and you can measure the degree of correlation spike, the beta on the downside is fairly predictable, which is one of the reasons why we've been rotating into some what I would call defensive equities. Not because we're forecasting something bad is happening, it's just the data says we're likely to have some struggles in the next few years, and we don't know when.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and open up the lines in case any of our participants have questions.
All guests have been unmuted.
All right. Well, Nick, I appreciate you taking time to join us today as you're traveling. And we will, if possible, make this recording available on our website. So if any of you that are on the call want to refer back to it, hopefully you'll be able to do that. And we will look forward to hearing from everybody or seeing everybody again on the call next month. Thanks, Nick.
All right. I appreciate the opportunity. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
All right. Thank you. You too.